On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycon, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! The hour, and we begin a brand new broadcast week right here on the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That is, of course, where you will find access to the chat room where folks are gathering even as we speak. Good evening, Anatole and Sentient and Sparky in Texas. Texas Betsy. That's where we'll be gathering for the evening's fun, full-on multimedia experience. This here evening, Randy letting me know loud and clear on iTunes on my Mac. Bob, thank you, Randy. Thank you very kindly. Yeah, it is Moran Monday, and imagine that. We haven't, Morans are, you know what? Morans disprove a whole lot of economic theory because a lot of, you know, economic theory is supposed to be based on scarcity, right? We never have a scarcity of morans on Moran Monday. And yet there still seems to be a strong market for morans. Maybe it's like one of those moons of Mars that moves in some sort of retrograde motion and just is the exception that proves the rule. I don't know. I simply do not know. But at any rate, come on by headonradionetwork.com. Wander into the chat room if you feel so inclined. You can also listen there at headonradionetwork.com by clicking the Listen Live button. You can always go to whiterosesociety.org and download the podcast feed and just subscribe. And every time a new podcast goes up, you'll get it and you'll find out about it lickety-split. Winky-dope. Sound good? I hope so. Oh, what else? Oh, yeah, by the way, I've been telling you, and I hope you're paying attention. I really have no way of knowing. That Dr. Bill has been doing a masterful analysis of the political origins of this country and its first political statement, i.e. the Declaration of Independence, since well before the beginning of the month of July. And he's getting down into the home stretch on that analysis at the Virtual Center for the Study of the Constitution and Civic Responsibility, which has its own podcast feed, by the way, which you can pick up at whiterosesociety.org under the subdomain for Dr. Bill himself. And I highly recommend that you do so because you will be more well-versed on the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution if you are listening to Dr. Bill. Now, of course, you might want to listen to some other programs, and that's fine. But if you actually want to listen to a program that will provide you meaningful, real-world, accurate information about the nature and structure of this considerably messed up country, then Dr. Bill's your go-to guy. Because nobody else is doing it. I mean, nobody else. I mean, the smartest man in progressive radio is not doing what Dr. Bill does. I'm not doing it. Rick Smith isn't doing it. Nobody's doing what Dr. Bill does, and he does it from either 1 or 1:30 to 3 in the afternoon every day, but you don't have to be there for that. That's Eastern Time, of course. You can get the podcast, and I implore you to, because if you do that and you tell others about Dr. Bill, how many other radio programs are there where a guy is passing out for free master's and doctoral level historical information? None. And certainly none when you factor in the idea that people are invited to call in and discuss things. Mm-mm. None. So, do check it out. Do check it out. The analysis that he has offered of the preamble to the Declaration of Independence is nothing short of brilliant. That having been said, he'll be back live behind the microphone at 1:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time tomorrow, Tuesday, the 15th of July, and 1 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on Wednesday, the 16th of July. And I think he hopes to wrap up his Declaration of Independence analysis at that time. And all of his stuff is also on YouTube, and he gave out that address earlier today. Our buddy Horst is the one who puts it up there, so it's all there for your consideration and your enjoyment. But I wasn't able to memorize the URL quite fast enough, so maybe at some point Horst will send that to me so that I can share it more broadly. Now, where are we? It is 6 minutes, 6 minutes past the hour. We begin a new week of broadcasting. Oh, by the way, that's where we are. We're at the oh, by the way portion of the program. Next week, Monday, a week from today, and Tuesday, I'm a gone gator. We have family obligations. I have family coming to visit, and we see each other once a year, so I'm hoping you'll forgive me for being away from the microphone during that period of time. Let's see. So that's going on, and there's a possibility. Yeah, there's a possibility that on Thursday the 24th I may not be here either. So that means next week is going to be kind of weird, which means that, well, never mind. So that's where we are. It's Moran Monday on the horn. That's what it is. No getting around it. And like I said, supply never drives demand. I mean, you could have Morans coming out your ears, and most Mondays we find a way to do that. And yet, demand would not diminish. Okay, so I don't, usually Moran Monday. Usually, Moran Monday is dominated, and it will be here as well. Usually, Moran Monday is dominated by right wingers, booger eaters, etc., and we will have our fair share. But hurry, hurry, hurry! Step right up, ladies and gentlemen, kiddies and cousins. It's Moran Monday on the horn, and we have a special edition of Moran Monday. We have a Moran Monday featuring, surprisingly, someone that is generally worshipped, it comes damn near worshipped, as a paragon, a hero, if you will, of the left. That's right. Step right up for less than 5 cents per hour of programming. You too, here behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas, and witness that strangest of all creatures, the left Moran, the Democratic Moran. We have one here today for your viewing pleasure. Remember, you can't tell the Morans without a program. This here is the Moran, the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits and Morans. Yeah, at this point in time, I'm hoping I have piqued your curiosity. Well, it was a big day here in almost level West by God, Virginia. Because it's not every day that one of the leading lights of progressive politics comes visiting. But in Shepherdstown, out in the eastern panhandle, where it's somewhat civilized and safe and close to D.C., Senator Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts, the senior senator of that commonwealth, came to visit. And I like Senator Warren. I like her a lot. I like the way she talks about economic populist issues in a way that resonates with, well, it almost has a Rooseveltian flavor to it, doesn't it? And I mean FDR, not Teddy. And we have, now bear in mind, they brought Senator Warren to Shepherdstown, which is way over in the eastern panhandle teapot neck spout, you know, because you can play I'm a little teapot with West Virginia. Short and stout, tip me over, pour me out. Well, the place, well, that's Shepherdstown. That little panhandle, that little spout neck, that's where they were. And Natalie was apparently stumping for the normal person vote, remembering, of course, that normal is only a setting on a dryer. And so, Senator Elizabeth Warren came to visit and speak up on behalf of Natalie Tennant. Natalie Tennant is our current Secretary of State in West Virginia, and she is chasing Shelley Moore Capito, who is a member of Congress and is running for Jay Rockefeller's soon-to-be-vacant Senate seat. And she is trailing badly, Natalie Tennant is. So odds are, and there's a lot of politics behind this, not the least of which is that the Moore family has been dear friends with the Manchin family. No. I said Manchin, not Manson. The Moore family has been dear friends with the Manchin family for going on a generation now. Old Uncle A. James Manchin was just bosom buddies with Shelley Moore Capito's daddy, Arch Moore, the single most corrupt Republican governor this state has ever had. He was real corrupt. Got caught acting as a bagman, shaking down the coal companies. I mean, if anybody can, and various other outfits. He was a shakedown artist. You know, good old-fashioned political graft. And corruption, even. And so she's running for Senate. And she, starting on like Friday or so, as soon as this visit was announced with Senator Warren coming to just barely West Virginia, Shelley Moore Capito started having a straight-up hissy. She even put out an online petition. Sign our petition and tell that liberal elitist Senator Warren eco-terrorist to go back wherever, Massachusetts or wherever she comes from. And there's been a steady stream. If you follow my Twitter feed, you can follow my responses to it because I couldn't just let it lie. You can find it. It's there. And you know, thanks. If I were the Tennant campaign, I would be, thanks, Shelley Moore, who laughed about the Freedom Industries disaster. Thanks. Well, I think this is really quite funny, she said. Thanks for all the free publicity for Senator Warren's visit, and lots of people showed up to hear Senator Warren. Well, this is Moran Monday though, and. Well, we have to, you'll see why, or you'll hear why. This is, after all, radio. Russell, a guy named Russell, who writes over at MorganCountyUSA.org, Morgan County being a county in West Virginia, decided to go and visit Natalie Tennant and try to get a couple of questions answered. Well, here's part of the stump speech from Senator Warren of the great Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
So we had the idea to build this little consumer agency, and we put it in to the financial reforms. What did Shelley Moore Capito think about those financial reforms? She thought it was more important to protect Wall Street than to protect Main Street. And that's why I'm here today. She is a...
Yeah, clap, damn it. That's your clap line. Okay, so that's Senator Warren talking about how important it is to elect Natalie Tennant to the Senate instead of Shelley Moore Capito, daughter of the single most corrupt politician West Virginia has ever known. All well and good. Do you like that line about how Shelley Moore Capito thought more it was more important to protect Wall Street than it was to protect Main Street? I mean, it's true. It is absolutely true. You betcha. There's only one problem. And I bet you already know what it is. Who, I might ask you, funds mountaintop removal coal extraction? Who funds the purchase of the 5.5 million pounds of high explosives that go off every day in West Virginia and Virginia and Tennessee and Kentucky? Who funds the massive earth-moving equipment that shoves rubble over into valleys every day, except Christmas, in the mountaintop removal sacrifice zone? Who does it? Yes, of course, Wall Street does that. And Shelley Moore, as sure as God made little green apples and they'll give you a bellyache and the runs if you eat too many of them, Shelley Moore supports Wall Street and the coal industry with all the every fiber of her being. Those 5.5 million pounds of explosives, when they go off and create all that filthy, toxic, poisonous dust that billows and pours and rolls down over our mountain communities. Yeah, Shelley Moore's all for the Wall Street firms that fund that and the coal companies that do it. But, so is Natalie Tennant. It gags my gut to say that, but it's the truth. So is Natalie Tennant. Natalie Tennant is four square in, well, never mind. Let's let Russell with his post over at Morgan County, USA, do it. So he was standing there, Russell was, with his video camera, and he got that picture about Wall Street and Main Street and that audio there that you heard. And then they had the meet and greet, so he started walking around with his little old video camera, trying to get an answer to a question.
Natalie, there was a article in the Charleston Gazette about mountaintop removal mining, and why don't you take a position on mountaintop removal mining?
It's a balanced approach. Man, she says her line's real good. She's ready for her close-up, Mr. DeMille. It's a balanced approach.
What kind of balance, Natalie?
And then for the remainder of the video, he tries to ask her the same question time and time again. No answer. It's a balanced approach. Let's go, Mountaineers!
It's a balanced approach.
Now, I already put down a prophylactic layer of duct tape just to keep me in the chair as soon as I saw this video. And by the way, if you want to see it too, you can go to Morgan County, USA, just like it sounds, MorganCountyUSA.org. Elizabeth Warren, Natalie Tennant, and mountaintop removal.
bless his heart, Russell, took my op-ed from the Charleston Gazette from early January of this year. And quoted it at some length by way of making his own point. Russell writes, after quoting my op-ed, "After her rally today, I asked Tennant if she would stand with those regular people in the coal fields of West Virginia who are suffering at the hands of Wall Street's coal barons. Why don't you take a position on mountaintop removal mining? Hey, what are you up to? Let's go, Mountaineers!" Tennant asked. No, she didn't say the "let's go, Mountaineers" part. "I'm up to asking you a question you've refused to answer."
It's a balanced approach.
"Do you support a moratorium?" No answer. "Do you support a moratorium?" No answer. No answer.
It's a balanced approach.
Is that what we call it when we pick up the caskets of 4,000 excess deaths in West Virginia's mountaintop removal counties every year, and we carry them slowly to their graves, and we make sure that we don't tip one side more than the other, or dump a corpse out in the dirt?
It's a balanced approach. Yes, you have to balance the casket as you approach the grave, Natalie Tennant. It's a balanced approach.
When a family in a mountaintop removal community makes a decision whether or not to consume the water that comes out of their sink looking like tomato soup and smelling like grim death, they have to balance that against whether or not they would like to go on living on this planet anymore.
It's a balanced approach.
When the billowing, boiling, roiling, rolling cloud of poison filth from a mountaintop removal blast comes boiling down the holler, and people decide whether to breathe or not, knowing that they are breathing tiny, micro-fine, ultra-fine particles of almost cancer itself. Well, they're balancing whether they should go on being breathing human beings right now versus whether they should sit in a doctor's office 20 years hence and let them say, "Well, you've got cancer and we don't know why."
It's a balanced approach.
Balance. You know where she picked that up from? She picked that up from Joe Manchin, who wants Shelley Moore Capito to win the election. Every time you ask Joe Manchin something about mountaintop removal, "Well, I think we need to be able to do it with balance." To hell with balance. I'm sick of balance. I'm sick of thinking that you can balance the needs of living, breathing, actual human beings against the desire of coal companies to get every last scrap of value out of the ground here in the Appalachian sacrifice zone for mountaintop removal and call that balance. I'm sick of being told that 4,000 people who have jobs that'll get them a new truck every 5 years, a new four-wheeler every two, and new light bulbs for Mrs. Mountaintop Remover's tanning bed every year, that somehow balances against people who have had their home values reduced from $120,000 to $10,000. You can't balance.
balance that. By saying balance, Natalie Tennant and Joe Manchin and all the other balance buffoons are saying that what they prefer is a status of out of balance. Because if you think of balance as a matter of a teeter-totter, the coal industry and their pet politicians, of whom apparently Natalie greatly desires to be one, well, they're sitting on one side of the teeter-totter, and they've got it all the way down to the ground. And they've got a little hummingbird on the other side, you know, tree huggers. And we're 15 feet up in the air. See, we're balanced. Morgan County, USA. MorganCountyUSA.org /P=1101. But you'll find it there. Just MorganCountyUSA.org. Elizabeth Warren, Natalie Tennant, and Mountaintop Removal. Oh, we're having a load of fun now, aren't we? For this year, Morian Monday. Yeah, Lottie in the chat room pointing out, on one side of the balance, you have piles of money for the 1%, and on the other side, you have human lives. Guess who wins? Every dollar pulled out of the ground is balanced by a death. That almost seems to scan with a line from Shakespeare, and our lives are round, and our little lives are rounded with a sleep. Robert asking the question via Skype. Bob, what exactly is it you want Natalie to say? If she says anything that costs even one coal mining job, the Republicans will brand her anti-coal. Just like if you're against posting the Ten Commandments in school, they'll say you're a Jesus hater. If she openly opposes mountaintop removal, she'll lose by 30 points, sad to say. This is a coal state, and we'll sacrifice certain people so coal can continue to profit. I hate it, but it's true. And there are elements of truth to it. But let me counterbalance that about something. Robert is suggesting, and I understand the argument, that she needs to be silent about mountaintop removal, and she can't say anything for fear of being labeled anti-coal. And she's running around out there. She is running around out there trying. I mean, she's doing everything except utterly humiliate herself in the name of coal. No, she's utterly humiliated herself. Let's see here. Even as I was speaking, and I suspect even as Robert was typing, this came in for the Capito U.S. Senate campaign. The Capito for Senate campaign today released the following wait a minute. I'm in West Virginia. I get to do the fun voice. The Capito for Senate campaign today released the following statement regarding Natalie Tennant's campaign event with ultra-liberal Senator Elizabeth Warren. Ultra-liberal. With an emphasis on ultra-liberal. Natalie Tennant's statement today that Elizabeth Warren is just like West Virginians says all you need to know about how out of touch she is with this state. She is a supporter of President Obama, a supporter of Elizabeth Warren, and she's going to have a hard time convincing West Virginia voters she's not associated with their extremely harmful and deeply unpopular policies. What we saw today was Natalie Tennant hitting the panic button in a last-ditch effort to save her struggling campaign. Her misleading personal attacks against Shelley Moore Capito and her family do not represent West Virginia values. Sadly, it just shows how low she will go to join her liberal buddies in the Senate.
That's about as good as Slim Whitman, Slim Pickens as you're, not Slim Whitman, Slim Pickens. That's about as good as Slim Pickens as you're going to get out of me. There you go, Robert. You just said it for me. Yeah, she was at the Coal Festival in Fairmont a while back, but she needs to remember you don't beat Republicans by being Republican light. And that's what she's trying to do. Because see, let me make it real plain. I'm not playing them lesser of two evil politics no more. I will not, if paid money, go and vote for Natalie Tennant. I will not. If I want somebody that's going to go up there and be all coal and be in favor of poisoning my family some more, then why shouldn't I just vote for Shelley Moore Capito? Honestly. Natalie Tennant, being as I are a registered Democrat who tries as often as possible to vote for Democratic candidates, Natalie Tennant actually needs my vote. But she doesn't want it very badly. She certainly doesn't want it badly enough to speak up for people who can't speak for themselves. She doesn't want it badly enough to speak up for people who might be going to the doctor tomorrow to get the cancer diagnosis. She doesn't want it badly enough to speak up for children who may wait 15, 20 years and then get the diagnosis themselves. She doesn't want it badly enough to speak up for the man who is a father right now, who long before he ever gets to be a grandfather will find himself clutching at his chest and going to his grave. Now, we will carry his coffin in a balanced fashion and a balanced approach to said grave, but she won't speak up for him either. She won't speak up for mamas who don't get to be grannies. She won't speak up for five-year-olds who don't get to be six-year-olds. She won't speak up. And that means she doesn't really want to be the senator from West Virginia. She's just a stalking horse to give Shelley Moore Capito some reason to raise money. Because money. And by God, Elizabeth Warren, well, hell! Shelley Moore Capito, she's got some friends too, and by golly, she's got her statement here from one of the leading lights political economic thinkers of the re-pig-licking party. It's time to get West Virginia back to work, and that starts with sending Shelley to the Senate. Few states have been hit harder by President Obama's devastating policies than West Virginia, but Shelley Moore Capito has been right there on the front lines fighting back. She has put forward solutions in the House to create jobs and to create a better West Virginia for hard-working taxpayers. She is dedicated to her state and to the people she represents, and I can tell you no one will fight harder for West Virginia in the Senate than Shelley Moore Capito. Yeah, Paul Ryan delivered that quote. And hey, I told you it was Moran Monday, right? Well, here's a statement from National Republican Senatorial Committee Chairman Jerry Moran. Repiglickin, from Kansas. Quoth the Moran. Natalie Tennant continues to falsely claim that she is an independent voice for West Virginia while warmly welcoming Senator Elizabeth Warren. Natalie Tennant is repeatedly mum on the issues that affect West Virginians, yet has no problem aligning herself with a senator that is anti-coal, anti-Keystone. Keystone? What the? Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. Keystone? I mean, I hate it, but since when has it got anything to do with West Virginia? It ain't coming here. Oh, shut up. And pro-carbon tax, proving that Senator Warren has no place in West Virginia politics. Natalie Tennant is simply too liberal for West Virginia, and her enthusiastic support for President Obama and Elizabeth Warren and their signature Obamacare law puts her at odds with workers and families in the Mountain State. Yeah, we hate that Obamacare. You know, when I clutched at my own chest and went running off to the hospital with my shiny new Obamacare, I was kind of glad to have it. Whereas Shelley Moore Capito prioritizes West Virginians, and anyone who knows Shelley knows that she always puts her state first. West Virginians are looking... Shelley puts the state first. That's a knee slapper. I don't care who you are, that's funny. And anyone who knows Shelley knows she always puts the coal industry first. There, that's better. West Virginians are looking for a leader like Shelley Moore Capito in the Senate to be a staunch advocate for their best interests. Somehow I think our best interests involve not breathing massive doses of ultrafine particulate matter from mountaintop removal sites and having our water poisoned and... never mind. Shelley will continue to be an effective problem solver in Washington, leading the fight against the war on West Virginia coal. Also Sprock Moran. And then, in case you were wondering, in opposing the appearance here of that death-dealing, demonic, liberal, baby-eating Elizabeth Warren, they even got a statement from, "The choice in West Virginia seems really simple. A strong leader like Shelley Moore Capito, who puts forward smart solutions to fix the problems in our country and her state, or another rubber stamp for President Obama and his job-killing policies. I've seen Shelley's work, particularly on the House Financial Services Committee, and she's absolutely proven she'll stand up to Obama, Senator Warren, or any of their liberal allies who are literally tearing down her state." Now, see, that's wrong, damn it! We got to sit down and have a little talk about the use of the word literally. If you're going to use the word literally, it means what's actually happening is not metaphor or simile or comparison. It is actually happening. And there are people who are literally tearing down our state. But it's Shelley Moore Capito's pals in the coal industry. She pals around with terrorists. Because believe you me, when the foundations start rattling and the windows shaking their frames, and you wonder if the house is going to come down on top of you because of a mountaintop removal blast, and you know that fear, that is terror, brethren and sistren. And that is terrorism. Who gave us that statement about rubber stamps and a clear choice a simple choice in West Virginia? Why, that was none other than my former neighbor there at 301 Maryland Avenue, Northeast Washington, D.C., Diaper David Vitter. Not kidding. So Robert, just sort of in answer to your initial premise, what does Natalie have to lose? She's already going to lose by 30 points. What does she have to lose to give people like me and thousands more like me a reason to vote for her? Because right now I'm blowing right past that race. I will not sully my character, my good name, my reputation, my morals, my ethics, or whatever it is that's my soul by ever casting a vote for Shelley Moore Capito. But I'm damn sure not going to compromise myself by voting for somebody who believes in all the same goddamn things she does, but has a D after her name. Oh, no. Oh, no. Note coming in from Steve. Bob Malloy was talking about the way ACT UP used to do things, in your face. Maybe it's time to use some of these bad Supreme Court decisions to our advantage. Get in anyone's face with photos of people dying or have died from coal. No buffer zone. Be in their face. Screw civility. truth tellers about coal are going to lose right now. So the only thing to do is at least make sure the pictures of the true terrors of coal get right in the face of these bastards and on TV. The pro-death people get their photos of dead fetuses on TV. It's about time we get photos of people who died from coal right on TV. Facts don't win hearts and arguments, Bob. When we progressives, actual pro-lifers, realize this, you know, we support people who are alive, realize this, then we will get what we want. We need to take back the emotional arguments, then we will win. Jump right in. Just to give you an idea of the kind, and do you get the idea that Shelley Moore Capito is scared to damn death of Elizabeth Warren? You see, Shelley Moore Capito, in a direct one-to-one colloquy debate with Elizabeth Warren, she wouldn't last 2 seconds. She'd be on the fainting couch because, among other things, Shelley Moore Capito is Otne ute itbre if you one what I in me. She just does what she's told and cashes the check. And you know what? If you're the coal industry, that's exactly the kind of politician you want. You don't want none of them thinkers. And I mean, they have been sleazing this for days. The minute that Elizabeth Warren's name was mentioned, the Capito team, the Moran Capito team, went absolutely sweat condition alpha, brown acid hallucinations crazy. Here's one. Here's one from A. Graham at CapitoForSenate.com, Amy Graham, who is apparently the press sleaze for Capito. Warren Tenant tag team is wrong for West Virginia coal miners. With anti-coal Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren campaigning for Natalie. Well, I don't think you can call her anti-coal anymore because she stood on the same podium, on the same platform, on the same dais with a woman who likes blowing up our communities, Natalie Tennant. With anti-coal Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren campaigning for Natalie Tennant in West Virginia tomorrow, it's worth taking a look back at Senator Warren's work on behalf of a large corporation to dump retired coal miners' health care. In her legal career, Elizabeth Warren fought to allow LTV Steel to dump its retired coal miners' health care as a challenge to the Coal Act that passed in 1992. So it's clear she hates our coal miners. What else? What else? Well, the best one, absolutely the best one, was the petition. And, of course, these petitions are means of trying to get people to sign so that you can then send them emails begging them for money. Here it is. I mean, this one just knocked me down. Say no to their radical agenda. Sign the petition. And it's a photograph of Natalie Tennant, Barack Obama, and Elizabeth Warren. Natalie Tennant is campaigning with anti-West Virginia Senator Elizabeth Warren. When has Elizabeth Warren ever said she hates West Virginia? because she hasn't. So, you know, being a repiglick, and naturally the Shelley Moore and Capito team has to start out with a bald-faced lie. They'd probably explode if they didn't. Our state needs a senator who will stand up to President Obama's liberal agenda, not pal around with. No, apparently somebody came to the Capito Senate campaign from maybe some previous work for Seward's Real Folly, Queen Crab, Godzilla from Wasilla, Caribou Barbie, Mussolini, Half-Baked Alaskan. Not pal around with one of its fiercest supporters. And this is my favorite part. Tell Elizabeth Warren to take her radical agenda somewhere else. Really? Shelley Moran Capito's campaign told Elizabeth Warren to get out of the state, that she weren't welcome here. I'm surprised they didn't just say, Elizabeth Warren, don't let the sun set on you here. Because by God, that's what they'd say about President Obama coming here, and that's why he doesn't. You know, real decent, like he showed up after the Upper Big Branch disaster at the memorial for the miners, and even went so far as to say, as to repeat the West Virginia Coal Association slogan for them. And we all need to remember that coal keeps the lights on. He did that. He did it. It's real. And still they hate him. And I remember the primary in 2008, May of 2008, May 23rd of 2008 maybe, or May 12th, or in May 2008, when Democrats, not Republicans, registered Democrats, were surveyed after the primary, and I remember the sweet little old blue-haired lady who said, I just don't know if America's ready to have a Negro president who's a Muslim. So it's going to be another very depressing November here in West Virginia, Stan. And it's going to be a depressing, God knows how long, being represented in this state by a couple of Republicans in the Senate. You know, Joe Manchin and Shelley Moore. But when she gets around to doing the post-mortem on her own campaign, I hope somebody will say to Natalie Tennant, Natalie, you can't out-Republican a Republican. The future is coming at us, Natalie. And you showed in your campaign that you wanted to be a part of the past and not the future. You showed that you don't give a good old-fashioned tinker's damn about the people who are being poisoned by mountaintop removal. It's a balanced approach. Shame on her. And now a word about Senator Warren. I tweeted at her. Somebody manages her Twitter account. Nobody responded, of course. I wasn't mean. I wasn't nasty. I asked via Twitter, since she's campaigning with Natalie, we need a clear statement from Senator Warren as to whether she supports mountaintop removal. Is that mean? Is that nasty? I don't think so. You have a candidate in West Virginia who thinks it's just fine to set off 5.5 million pounds
of ammonium nitrate fuel oil explosives, just like the ones Timothy McVeigh used, all over central Appalachia every day except Christmas. And you're coming down and rubbing shoulders with her, Senator Warren. I think it's fair for us to ask you if you support that, because mountaintop removal support rubs off on you real quickly. I mean, you can't get near coal dust that you're not going to get some on you. And in your lungs, and transiting the heart-lung barrier to the heart, and transiting the blood-brain barrier to the brain. I mean, coal gets around, Senator Warren. And I asked, while in West Virginia, Senator Warren, see the mountaintop removal that both Natalie for West Virginia and Capito for West Virginia support. People are being poisoned for profit. Natalie wants to talk education, but West Virginia's biggest problem, Senator Warren, is mountaintop removal and a massive health crisis. And every one of those statements is absolutely true. And this is not a criticism of Senator Warren, because she still has my respect. But it is time to stop pretending that we can talk about climate change around the rest of this country and somehow or another tiptoe around West Virginia and think that we're going to solve climate change everywhere but here. Because this is West Virginia. This is the cradle of climate change. It started here. It was fueled here in our ignorance for 150 years. The industrial boom that led to the massive fortunes of J.P. Morgan and Rockefeller and Carnegie and Vanderbilt. All of that was fueled out of West Virginia. I could take you to a little town. It is nothing but a ghost town now. Everything but tumbleweeds, really. I could take you to a little town called Thurmond, West Virginia. At one point in time in the 20th century, more coal moved through Thurmond, West Virginia, than moved through Richmond, Pittsburgh, and Wheeling combined. A lot of West Virginians have served in this nation's military, but during the Second World War, a lot of them got to stay here. Specifically because they were deemed to be more necessary inside the coal mines than on the fields of fire in Europe or the South Pacific. Right here, right now, in 2014, today, three coal miners died of black lung, an absolutely preventable disease that they got digging coal out of the ground for electrical generation and for export to foreign lands, some of whom despise us, like Russia. There's an entire mountain or series of mountains that have been dug into and blown up to provide coal, to provide power
and raw materials for steel making for Russia. And I know playing that xenophobic card doesn't work with the Horn Family Commune congregation, and that is not my point in the first part. But I'll be damned if I will ever, as an American, and remember, I'm a borderer, I'm Scots-Irish, I'm getting my back up in a hurry, I will be damned if anyone will ever convince me that my family owes a goddamn penny to Russia or India or the Netherlands or Germany or Japan or China. Not a penny. Not after what we've sacrificed. Not after what we've already given. No, no, no. That bill has, by God, been paid in full. And we cannot pretend that we give a rat's rear end about climate change and have Senator Warren, a woman that I respect deeply, come here and not at least acknowledge our sacrifice. This is a sacrifice zone. And we should not go quietly, and we should not tolerate quiet on the parts of those who would otherwise remain silent. For if we do, they'll just keep on killing us. Like they've been doing for over 100 years. And this may sound a little dissonant if you're not in Appalachia, and most of the Horn Family Commune congregation isn't. But you've learned over the years to think about what things mean here, because you've been a part of this conversation. And that is exactly what it means. Have a nationally known politician that strikes that much fear in the hearts of the Repiglican elite come here and remain silent on a human rights crisis that is as great or greater than virtually any other in the United States. We have a crisis of some tens of thousands of unaccompanied children entering the United States that has brought out the shameful worst in the right wing in this country. But for years now, we've had a human rights crisis affecting children right here in the heart of the eastern United States. And how many people even know about it? Mountain Dew mouth. Thanks, Diane Sawyer. So I think Malloy and by extension Steve are right. Maybe it's time for us to quit being so nice. Maybe it would have been great if Beyond Russell there from MorganCountyUSA.org, maybe it would have been great if we could have had some pissed off hillbillies up there. Not the right-wing kind. Pissed off hillbillies saying, hey, Natalie, you don't get to remain silent and talk about balanced approaches for people who are being killed. Damn it. So here we are. Top of the hour. Filibobster over, I think. And lots more Moran Monday yet to come. We'll take a break. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Granddad was a union man, worked deep beneath the ground. Said a prayer in the morning and again to see the sun go down. Day from night by lantern light to earn enough to eat. Saturday moon on the mountainside, the fiddle moved their feet. When in the mines of 14 took a walk for 21. Raised 5 kids in the holler, lock his daddy down. Company cut costs and corners everywhere could. Sell every Sunday they gave thanks that they had it good. I know that times are changing, they say progress is good.
I guess there's some folks don't like that style of music, but a lot that do. I can tell you this much. Gives me chills. Made by Hand. That track by Andrew McKnight. You can find out more about his music at andrewmcknight.net. A-N-D-R-E-W-M-C-K-N-I-G-H-T. McKnight. andrewmcknight.net. And he is a powerful singer, songwriter, and musician. andrewmcknight.net. That song, Made by Hand. Oh, it is Moran Monday on the horn, and where to go? Where to go? Where to go? Okay, how about some persecution complex Moranity? Now, Thursday, I think it was the night of the children's hour here on the horn when we talked about little immigrant children who will never see their parents again. And we talked about little children in Gaza who will never see anybody again because they're real busy now being dead thanks to the IDF and the bloodthirsty assault on Gaza. Well, don't worry. Vanessa Oblinger, O-B-L-I-N-G-E-R, Vanessa at JavelinDC.com, JAVELINDC.com. Vanessa Oblinger is out there to make sure that everybody understands that Israel is in the victim in all of in all of this slaughter, and they're only slaughtering those Palestinians in Gaza for their own good. See, I've said this before, and I'll say it again. I feel kinship with people in Gaza. If you're getting shit blown up all around you every day, I feel kinship with you, too. And it's a kinship born of common humanity, not a common language or a common religious heritage or even a common culture. It is the commonality of cordite. So bless her little old pea-picking heart, Vanessa at JavelinDC.com says, as the violence worsens in Gaza, so does the propaganda effort to portray Israel as the aggressor. No, imagine that. Israel sends jets and helicopters and missiles, the guided kind, not the bottle rocket bullshit that Hamas sends up, into Gaza. But they're not the aggressors. No, they're the victims.
With negative mainstream media coverage following suit, Palestinian activists are taking to Twitter using the hashtag,
and I doubt this.
Palestinian activists are taking to Twitter using the hashtag,
you know, the guy, the Charlie Chaplin mustache that we refuse to mention here,
was right. The UN has also jumped in with its latest situation report, claiming that apparently approximately 77% of Palestinian fatalities have been civilians, and that of those killed, more than 30 are children.
Remember, she's already declared, Vanessa Oblinger has, that this is all just propaganda. The little 18-month-old dead baby that right-winger Vanessa Oblinger would be worried half-sick about if the baby was still in the womb. Well, the baby's 18 months old and was slaughtered in its crib by an Israeli airstrike, so now the baby is just propaganda.
Meanwhile, everyone is overlooking Israel's many attempts at avoiding civilian casualties, including literally warning their Gaza targets by phone and leaflet.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes, ma'am, this is the IDF.
Yes, how can I help?
Well, ma'am, we're just calling to let you know that we're going to bomb your mud hut into 1,000 tiny pieces here in about 15 minutes. You might want to get out.
Is this another one of those crank calls? Ahmed, I've told your mother.
No, ma'am. The Jets, no, really. About 13 minutes now, we're going to reduce your home to rubble.
But we don't, Hamas isn't here.
We don't give a goddamn, ma'am. We're going to blow your house up. Because Hamas keeps shooting bottle rockets.
But what do I do?
Well, we suggest you leave, ma'am.
Well, could I go next door?
No, we're blowing that house up too, ma'am.
Well, I wonder how far I could get in 13 minutes.
Well, I don't know, ma'am. Before the missiles land, we'll give you some leaflets.
For what?
Well, to tell you that we're going to blow your house up, ma'am. And then the full-on persecution paranoia begins.
How the Middle East's lone democracy was turned from paragon into pariah is the subject of Mert's new book, Making David into Goliath, How the World Turned Against Israel. Is a fellow at the Johns Hopkins University School of Advanced International Studies and one of the nation's leading scholars on social and the Middle East. I don't know, social what? That's an adjective, Vanessa. Josh is currently available for interviews. Please let me know if you're interested.
And, of course, the piece begins with a pitch quote from Alan Dershowitz, who thinks anybody who ever delivered him a cold cup of coffee is, of course, a Nazi. Today, Israel stands as one of the world's most criticized and most despised nations. Such global luminaries as Jimmy Carter, Archbishop Tutu, and former UN Chief Kofi Annan lambast Israel every time Israel acts in self-defense.
Really? That's self-defense? Slaughtering an 18-month-old is self-defense?
Well, you know what? You know what Colonel Chivington said? Nits make lice. Europeans tell pollsters they think Israel is the world's most dangerous country. The UN General Assembly devotes nearly one quarter of its votes to excoriating the Jewish state. U.S. college campuses resound with calls to boycott and sanction it. And so the long thing is a book pitch. But Israel, remember, Israel's the victim. And they're willing to slaughter civilians to prove it. I don't know if that hashtag on Twitter is actually correct. I don't know if it really exists or, it's another one of those paranoid fantasies from the well-paid, AIPAC bunch. But if that's a real hashtag, that's sickening. That is absolutely disgusting. But I will warrant you that it was probably not invented by some mother mourning her dead 18-month-old. I wonder if we've got any... Oh, I'll check it out as we talk. Interesting piece of video here. Don't know.
See, that's the problem with audio of 18 months old being bombed into oblivion. It really doesn't have a lot of resonance on radio. You've got to be able to at least see something flying into a building. The happy hippie Billy
sent this along. From RT, the IDF practice of firing a missile at a civilian home to warn the occupants to leave the building before a larger attack has been caught on film. Wow, that's some warning. Amnesty International has decried roof knocking, saying it no way constitutes an effective warning. A YouTube video uploaded on Saturday shows how a Palestinian house is struck by a warning shot before being destroyed by a full missile attack. Prior to the strike, the occupants of the building reportedly... You thought I was kidding, didn't you? Prior to the strike, the occupants of the building reportedly received a call from the IDF warning of an imminent attack. On Sunday, the Israel Defense Forces, desperate for some, you know, decent PR, released a recording of a phone call made to a Gaza resident. The call was made on Saturday, warning of an impending strike. An IDF operator is heard starting the conversation with, "Hi, do you speak Hebrew? How are you? Is everything okay?" Wait, no, really? You're effing kidding me, right? The phone call to a Palestinian home in Gaza begins with, "Hi, do you speak Hebrew?" Oh, you can't, I don't dare laugh, because there's nothing funny about this. The operator then proceeds with information that the IDF needs, quote, "to target the building that is located close to you. We are trying to make sure before we strike the target that there are no civilians in the vicinity." I answered the phone! I'm a civilian! I'm here! Don't bomb! No, we're bombing anyway. I was being way too charitable with the IDF. "In 5 minutes, we will strike the target." Okay, so you're up on the sixth floor, and you get 5 minutes to get out. No time to save precious family mementos. No time to take a little bit of food or maybe a couple of bottles with you. You gotta go. And you gotta walk down six floors of stairs to get out the door before the missile hits, and you've got 5 minutes to do it in. You know what? That's not war. That's terrorism. It is. Because for those last 5 minutes of your life, you're going to realize you never had a chance. And yet you're going to try to get out. But you won't. And you know it. And so sitting there on the sixth floor and knowing that you've got 5 minutes to get out, maybe you just decide that, by God, they're going to kill you anyway. You'll not be killed running from them. Kind of like why so many of us don't leave Appalachia. And you know what? Nobody's willing to do anything about it because Israel might just fry the world if we tried. They've got nukes and they're not afraid to use them. Note coming in from Bill in Montana. Came across this link the other day, an op-ed from Haaretz, a little long to read on air, but maybe worth it anyway. I had to look up a couple of definitions, but they were easy to find. Fundamentalists of all stripes make me sick. Dateline, July 7th, 2014. By Gideon Levy. "Our Wretched Jewish State." By the way, you'll notice nowhere in my critique of Israel's behavior have I suggested even remotely that Israel does not have a right to exist. I have not. Israel does not, however, have an indiscriminate right to slaughter 18-month-olds and 5-year-olds and 6-year-olds and 7-year-olds and 8-year-olds and 9-year-olds. Unless, of course, they want to adopt as formal policy Colonel Chivington's statement that nits make lice. Gideon Levy, for those of you who do not know him, Gideon Levy is a hero of the peace movement in Israel. He refuses to be silent when the Israeli government has done everything in their power to try to silence him. He has been referred to as the bravest man in Israel. And he doesn't carry a gun. This op-ed piece from Haaretz begins, "Now we know. In the Jewish state there is pity and humane feelings only for Jews, rights only for the chosen people. The Jewish state is only for Jews. The youths of the Jewish state are attacking Palestinians in the streets of Jerusalem, just like Gentile youths used to attack Jews in the streets of Europe. The Israelis of the Jewish state are rampaging on social networks, displaying hatred and a lust for revenge unprecedented in its diabolic scope. Some unknown people from the Jewish state, purely based on his ethnicity. These are the children of the nationalistic and racist generation, Netanyahu's offspring." Remember, this is being published in Israel. You can't find anything this profound anywhere in the for-profit media of the United States, because that person would immediately be screamed into submission. For 5 years now, they have been hearing nothing but incitement, scaremongering, and supremacy over Arabs from this generation's true instructor, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Not one humane word, no commiseration or equal treatment. They grew up with the provocative demand for recognition of Israel as a Jewish state, and they drew the inevitable conclusions. Even before any delineation of what a Jewish state means, will it be a state that dons tefillin, kisses mezuzot, sanctifies charms, closes down on the Sabbath, and keeps strict kashrut laws? The penny has dropped for the masses. The mob was the first to internalize its true significance. A Jewish state is one in which there is room only for Jews. The fate of Africans is to be sent to the Halat detention center in the Negev, while that of Palestinians is to suffer from pogroms. That's how it works in a Jewish state. Only this way can it be Jewish. In the Jewish state in the making, there is no room even for an Arab who strives his utmost to be a good Arab, such as the writer Syed Kashua. In a Jewish state, the chairman of the Knesset plenary session, member of the Knesset Ruth Calderon from Yesh Atid, the center of the political map, needless to say, cuts off Arab member of the Knesset Ahmed Tibi, who's just returned all shaken up from a visit to the family of the murdered Arab boy from Shuafat, impudently preaching to him that he must also refer to the three murdered Jewish teens, even after he just did that. In a Jewish state, the High Court of Justice approves the demolition of a murder suspect's family home even before his conviction. A Jewish state legislates racist and nationalist laws. The media in the Jewish state wallows in the murder of three yeshiva students, while almost entirely ignoring the fates of several Palestinian youths of the same age who have been killed by army fire over the last few months, usually for no reason. No one was punished for these acts. In the Jewish state, there is one law for Jews and another for Arabs, whose lives are cheap. There is no hint of abiding by international laws and conventions. In the Jewish state, there is pity and humane feelings only for Jews, rights only for the chosen people. The Jewish state is only for Jews. The new generation growing in its shadow is a dangerous one, both to itself and its surroundings. Netanyahu is its education minister. The militaristic and nationalist media serves as its pedagogic epic poem. The education system that takes it to Auschwitz and Hebron serves as its guide. The new Sabra, native-born Israeli, is a novel species, prickly both on the outside and the inside. He has never met his Palestinian counterpart, but knows everything about him. The Sabra knows he is a wild animal intent only on killing him, that he is a monster, a terrorist. He knows that Israel has no partner for peace, since this is what he's heard countless times from Netanyahu, Foreign Minister Avigdor Lieberman, and Economy Minister Naftali Bennett, From Yair Lapid, he's heard that they are Zoabis, referring dismissively to member of the Knesset Hanin Zoabi. Being left-wing or a seeker of justice in the Jewish state is deemed a crime. Civil society is considered treacherous, true democracy, and evil. In a Jewish state, dreamed of not only by the right wing, but also by the supposed center-left, including Tzipi Livni and Lapid, democracy is blurred. It's not the skinheads that are the Jewish state's main problem. It's the sanctimonious eye-rollers, the thugs, the extreme right wing, and the settlers. It's not the margins, but the mainstream, which is partly very nationalistic and partly indifferent. In the Jewish state, there is no remnant of the biblical injunction to treat the minority or the stranger with justice. There are no more Jews left who marched with Martin Luther King or who sat in jail with Nelson Mandela. The Jewish state, which Israel insists the Palestinians recognize, must first recognize itself. At the end of the day, at the end of a terrible week, it seems that a Jewish state means a racist, nationalistic state meant for Jews only. You can find that at informationclearinghouse.info or just look up Gideon Levy. That's not the first time he's written anything like that. And there is no way, and this is the important thing, there is no way to stop it. No one can stop it. The Arabs, having been whipped soundly, militarily, every time they tried to stand up, or every time in unprovoked aggression they attacked, have learned their lesson. They're not going to do it anymore. The Palestinians are by God on their own. They are alone on planet Earth. They are there to be whipped and beaten, blasted and shot, burnt, incinerated, buried. Whenever Israel gets pissed off enough from having crude rocket rounds fired in to some uninhabited desert. The United States won't stop them. I mean, we won't even cut off the $3 billion of taxpayer money we send every year because we're afraid of them. Europe won't stop it. Europe is afraid of them. Because, you see, of all the countries that have nuclear devices, the Israelis make us most nervous. Oh, okay, yeah, the North Koreans, yeah, they make us a little nervous. The Pakistanis make us nervous because they could lose their government to some sort of ultra-right-wing religious fundamentalist gang of thugs any day. It could happen any time. India hates Pakistan. Pakistan hates India. They make us nervous, too. But nobody quite scares us as much as the Israelis do with their nukes. Because we know that they're calm and cool and reasoned and rational. They're not like those crazy Koreans or those crazy Pakistanis. No, the Israelis are capable of coming to a cool, calculated, reasoned determination that if it can't be their way, it'll be nobody's way. And they'll roast the planet. And they can't be disarmed. And they can't be invaded. And they can't be persuaded. And they can't be reasoned with.
because they are lost down the nationalist right wing, dare I say it, fascist rat hole. And so, just as is the case, just as is the case with America and its fascination with guns, you just reach an entente. As long as we don't mess with the Israelis and we let them slaughter whoever they want to, whenever they want to, maybe they won't roast the planet. Like in the United States, we say, hey, you know, somebody's five-year-old just has to take it in the head once in a while from one of these Second Amendment gun people, so the Second Amendment gun people won't start shooting at everybody. How sad. How sad. But that's not the only morons we've got. We're an hour and a half into the program this evening, and I wanted to point something out. You know, this is a listener-supported broadcast. And I wanted to thank Glenn. We try to raise $150 every day. And I do get achingly weary of constantly having to mention that. So I decided to try a little experiment this evening. I decided to wait as long as I possibly could and see if there was, if we did any fundraising without me pitching, as it were. And by God, we did. Thank you, Glenn. Thank you very, very much. We have $150 to raise, and thanks to Glenn, we now have $130 to raise. So, maybe, hopefully, other folks will want to jump in with Glenn and help keep us from getting in a hole this week. My absences next week are unavoidable. And so we'll get ourselves in a hole next week for sure. Hopefully we won't be in one this week. PayPal buttons at headonradionetwork.com. So too is the traditional mail address, if you prefer to work that way. Just remember, if you're mailing something in, don't make anything payable to Bob Kincaid. Make it to the Horn or Head on Radio Network, something like that. And that way Boss Man Wayne can deal with it when he gets it. Thank you, one and all, because that is how we continue to do this. It's the only way we continue. Ron and Raleigh writing in, hey, Bob, these never end well. Bob, you have to realize if you call attention to the murderous predation of the filthy IDF, you're an anti-Semite. Israel will always be the victim. And see, I just don't like anybody who goes and slaughters anybody's children. By extension, I don't like the situation that has developed in El Salvador and Guatemala and Honduras. And the drug gangs and cartels that have risen up that kidnap children and murder them if they don't go along and join the gang. I don't like that either. But so far, and this must be borne in mind with regard to Central America, so far it hasn't interrupted commerce, as far as we can tell. You know how we know it hasn't interrupted commerce? Because business isn't complaining. If the bananas are still being chopped, if they're still being hoisted onto the boats, or the trucks, or what the hell ever, and they're still winding up at your local superfood market,
then everything's okay. You know how we'll know when it's affecting the market? I mean, look, the right-wingers are having a field day, aren't they, hollering about little nasty little immigrants? Aliens! Yeah, there's that word. By the way, tune into Dr. Bill tomorrow. Because Dr. Bill will be talking about the unalienable clause in the Declaration of Independence. And I spoke with him just for a couple of minutes toward the end of his program today, just trying to think about what that means, alienable. Because it's a word that comes out of property law. And it means very specific things. But alien comes from the Latin root word meaning other, inter alia, among other things. Alia, alien, other, otherness. So when you hear some right-winger talking about a child from Central America being an alien, don't let the first thing that pops into your mind be E freaking T. Let the first thing that comes to mind be the fact that some right-winger somewhere thinks that that child is something other, alia, alien, other than human. Because that's what they're saying. I ran across this over the weekend. And I think the audio will translate fine. I mean, it's not like it's in a foreign language. This is 2 minutes of audio. It's on my Facebook page somewhere. And I recommend it because it makes an abundance of sense. I recommend that you share it around.
Central America is in the midst of what the world recognizes as a humanitarian crisis. Criminal gangs are taking over much of the region, and a civilian was more likely to be murdered in one of these countries over the last several years than to be killed in Iraq during the height of the insurgency. Those gangs are recruiting young...
Wait, hold on. I want to hear that again.
...countries over the last several years than to be killed in Iraq during the height of the insurgency.
But wait, we had to kill them over there so we wouldn't have to fight them over here, but they're dying over here faster than they died over there. More likely to be killed in Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador since 2009 than people were likely to be killed in Iraq during the insurgency, the worst of the insurgency. Why isn't our military in Central America? Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot. We're not in Central America because we haven't started fracking Central America or blasting Central American coal reserves or drilling for oil in Central America yet, right? Because by God, if there were some resources down there, I tell you what... the right wing and the Republicans would be hollering for warfare and grinning and happier than Dick Cheney sitting in a bathtub of blood. That's a sobering statistic, isn't it? 2009 to 2012, homicide rate averaged per 100,000 people, Guatemala 41.7 per 100,000, Honduras, 83.6 per 100,000. El Salvador, 61.5 per 100,000. And Iraq wasn't any of that. Lower. And man, we thought Iraq was a bloodbath, didn't we? Because it was. Since 2009. That's 5 years ago. That's 2009 to 2012. It's probably gotten worse since 2012. How many news stories have there been? And this is one of those things that the number-crunching, super analytical types could handle. I can't. How many for-profit media news stories have there been on the nightly news? I don't care where, CNN, Fox, you know, ABC, CBS, whatever. How many have there been on the homicide rate in Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador since 2009? How many? No, no, you can't place your bet on zero. I've got zero. Anyway.
And if the teenager resists recruitment, will threaten, injure, or even kill the teenager or family members. As a result, many teenagers and younger children are choosing to leave their home countries and seek asylum elsewhere in the region. They're going to Mexico, to Costa Rica, to Nicaragua, and many of them are going to the United States. Since October 1st of last year, 52,000 children unaccompanied by adults have been apprehended by Border Patrol, and that's not counting the tens of thousands of mothers who are bringing their children into the United States to flee as well. Of course, having so many people come into the country admittedly without papers is causing a lot of controversy. Part of this is because they've strained the existing system, which was built under the Bush administration to deal with 6,000 to 8,000 kids coming across the border alone every year, not 52,000. But part of it's because some would like the border to be a force field, to be able to automatically refuse anyone who doesn't have proper papers from being able to set foot in the United States. But there are very good reasons that the border isn't a force field. U.S. law has an established process so that when someone comes across the border and doesn't have papers but fears for their life, there can be a way to determine if they're eligible for asylum or another form of humanitarian relief. But that's the system that's currently being overwhelmed. So the question facing the United States right now is, how far are we willing to go in the name of immigration enforcement without undermining the humanitarian commitment that if you fear persecution and you escape to America, we will try to find a place for you?
2 minutes, like I said. Doesn't sound like an intractable problem, does it? No, of course not. But it's an intractable problem if you're a right-wing xenophobe in this country and you hate everybody that isn't roughly the same skin tone as you. 58,000, where are we going to put them? Dumbass, have you ever flown from New York to San Francisco or Atlanta to L.A.? You ever see how much land there's still? Right. Bless his little heart, Thomas Jefferson, writing about the Louisiana Purchase, I believe it was, said that we have secured enough land for the United States of America to last unto the 1,000th generation. That's 1802. That's 212 years ago. How many generations is that? Yeah. I know. Stockton, Larry. Bob. Who's going to pay for that? He also argued, U.S. military not in Central America. Are we sure about that? No, we're not sure at all. We're probably there, but I mean, we're not, you know, parachuting troops in and landing on the coasts and, you know, marching forward and, you know, getting our war on real fun like Dick Cheney likes when he's got his little rubber ducky in his bathtub of blood. And Marty, of course, asking, who says those rockets being launched from Gaza are being fired by Palestinians? Considering the caliber of the weapon gets thrown into Israel, I find myself wondering if the Mossad agents have folks working in the occupied territories firing the rockets. A bit Operation Northwoods-like. Well, they're capable of anything. I don't know that there's been any. Is there anything to suggest proof of that? I haven't seen it if there is. Oh, but Lord, we got Morans. Mercifully, this is not a story out of West Virginia. There's an organization out there apparently called Moms with Guns. Don't ever want to meet them. Don't want to know them. Please wear a badge so I can cut a wide swath around you if I see you. preferably out of range. Kathy Perkins is the founder of Moms with Guns, and she went onto her Facebook and page to make sure everybody knew just exactly how she feels about that Kenyan Muslim usurper with the deep-seated hatred of white people and anti-colonialist tendencies. On her Facebook page, she typed the following, probably one letter at a time with one finger and a toenail in her mouth. Where is an assassin? Yeah, she misspelled assassin, by the way. Of course. Where is an assassin when you need one? And she did this over top of a photograph that's captioned, President Obama snacks on some Texas barbecue while Governor Perry tours the Texas border. So who's really out of touch here? Where is an assassin when you need one? And one person chimed in and said, duh. Also on the same Facebook page, another person said, I know. I'm amazed it hasn't happened yet. Yeah, she's one of those gundamentalists. She's an amosexual. She describes herself on Twitter as, Moms with Guns demand action. We demand the right to protect ourselves and our families. An armed society is a safe society. Idiot. And in light of the fact that we let the Bundyvillians just point guns at federal officials without doing anything about it, you reckon anybody will do anything about Moms Demand Action, Kathy, asking where's an assassin when you need one? Oh, mercy. Oh, and by the way, the Bundyvillians, they're on the move. Liberals Unite reporting. Armed anti-government militia groups heading for the Texas border. According to the San Antonio Express News, a slew of anti-government groups, many of which participated in the standoff at Clive and Bundy's Nevada Ranch, are recruiting armed volunteers to travel to the Texas-Mexico border as a citizen militia to participate in Operation Secure Our Border, that's Operation SOB, which aims to stop the surge of immigrants into the country. The San Antonio Express News identifies the group as Patriots, Oath Keepers, and Three Percenters. You might recall the Three Percenter group is headed by that guy whose audio we played the other night. What's his name? He collects a check from the government every month and hates the government. Mike Vanderbilt. They're mobilizing volunteers to head to the border at Laredo, Texas, to assist law enforcement agencies. Have law enforcement agencies said they needed assistance? Have they put out a call for that well-regulated militia? Because I try to pay attention to stuff like that, and I ain't seen nothing like it. According to the Washington Post, members said the goal is not to interfere with law enforcement, but to help secure the border and slow the surge of undocumented immigrants illegally entering the country. Chris Davis, according to the LA Times, is the head of the group, and he's famous for a YouTube video, quote, according to the LA Times, in which he appears to advise members to confront and intimidate those caught crossing the border illegally. You see an illegal, you point your gun dead at him, right between his eyes, and you say, get back across the border or you will be shot. Of course, patriot that he is, he pulled the video down as quickly as it started getting some publicity. No, as it turns out, law enforcement on the border hasn't said a damn thing about calling up a well-regulated militia, because if they did, you know, it'd be the National Guard. According to the LA Times, Brenda Medina, spokesman for the sheriff's office in Webb County, where Laredo is located, said the group had contacted her office, but sheriff's officials have no plans to meet with them. A Laredo police spokesman did not return calls from the Times on Monday. And then this also from the LA Times article. Denise Freeman, a North Carolina spokeswoman for the SOB group, Secure Our Border, we'll just call them SOBs, said they have been screening and training volunteers at a command center outside San Antonio, probably a single wide trailer with no air conditioner, where they will rotate troops down to the Laredo area and later farther along the Texas border. She said the militia has signed notarized statements from landowners allowing them to patrol their properties, mainly to combat drug smuggling. If we happen to run across someone crossing illegally, we are prepared to do a citizen's arrest, Freeman's told the Times. Citizen's arrest. Been watching Dragnet a little bit too much, have you, Denise? Thank you, citizen. We are not going to respond violently. We will not fire unless fired upon. And, of course, these goobers being what they are, somebody opening a can of Snapple or, you know, a bottle of pop can be, I think that's gunfire! Shoot! Yeah. They're going to make citizens' arrests. You know what another word for citizen's arrest is? Kidnapping. Holding someone against their will by threat of force of some sort is kidnapping. In other words, these patriots are actually armed kidnapping gangs. But they're patriots and they love America. I get all misty-eyed just thinking about it. I do. There's so much love for America out there. Yeah. I do. I get misty-eyed.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life.
Sing it, Lee.
And I had to start again with just my children and my wife.
Yeah. Amen. Now, see, and if I had to start again with just my children and my wife, how about if you have to start again and there's nothing left but the children? And you send them on thousands of miles long journey all the way across Central America, up through Mexico, just trying to get to America where maybe there's an uncle or an aunt. Oh, but see, that's the thing. Little 8-year-old brown children whose first language may well be Mayan and not Spanish. They don't get to think about God bless the USA. They don't get to pray for the United States because they don't belong here. Dirty little aliens. See how it works. lining up. They're lining up all over America. Wingnuts are. To spit on children. That sure does speak well of us, doesn't it? Yeah. Oh, and just for the sake of a little bit of balance, or not a little bit, but a lot, I have no tolerance.
See, he said he's intolerant.
I have no tolerance for anyone who challenges the right to exist of any human being. I have no tolerance for anyone who denies the realities of history, whether it's some modern, unreconstructed, treason-embracing neo-Confederate or a neo-Nazi. They're kind of the same in my book. I got no stomach for people who slaughter 18-month-olds in their cradle. And I got no stomach for people who deny slaughter on a wholesale basis. Hence this. And you might want to get out. You might want to get out the duct tape and the hockey puck for this one. This is a... This is a story that's been developing for a while, but more details have come out about it, and those details are quite disturbing. It has to do with the Rialto Unified School District in California and middle schoolers. Remember, you got to start with the kids young, and that way it'll stick. I mean, that's how religion works. The San Bernardino County Sun had the story originally, in which the Rialto Unified School District had a teaching module, and it came to light this past May, in which children were given the essay question, and this is, like I said, I don't recommend that you get out the duct tape and the tennis ball for nothing. See, what was the question here? I've got it. And it amazes me that in 2014 this happens, but this happens because, see, the right-wingers and the little neo-Nazis find all kinds of cracks and crevices in which to hide. And they do quite a bit of damage, really. And the question put to these children at in the Rialto, California Unified School District, well, here's the direction. Write an argumentative essay utilizing cited textual evidence in which you explain whether or not you believe the Holocaust, to see, believing.
There's the, see, do you see why I say that that is the single most dangerous word in the English language, believe? You believe instead of know. There's nothing to believe about the Holocaust. There are only brutalities to know.
Explain whether or not you believe the Holocaust was an actual event in history, comma, or merely a political scheme created to influence public emotion and gain.
Wow! Who in the name of heaven and earth and all below and above is the educator who came up with that question? Maybe it was done by committee.
In order to help the children write their critical thinking essays about whether the Holocaust is a myth. Among other things to which they were directed was BibleBelievers.org.au.
Sorry, Robert.
Here's what it says over at BibleBelievers.org.au. Though 6 million Jews supposedly died in the gas chambers, not one body has ever been autopsied and found to have died of gas poisoning. We have been shown piles of bodies from World War II, but most of these persons died of typhus or starvation or Allied bombings, and a great many of those were murdered Germans, not Jews. You know, because, see, There was no such thing before World War II as a German Jew. Yes, there were. Lots of them. German citizens who were Jewish. But they were Germans, not Jews. That's like saying, well, you know how the right wing is. They confuse all Arabic peoples with, they think all Arabic peoples are Islamic. And all Islamic people are Arabs, you know, getting it wrong on both counts. They were Germans, not Jews. Roughly, roughly the equivalent of 10 football fields should be packed full of gassed bodies to present as evidence, yet not one body has ever been discovered. Holy cow. So the Rialto Unified School District said they'd revise the assignment.
Revise? How about scrap?
But that's okay. The kids had already written their essays. Here's a quote. And this kid got a 23 out of a possible 30. The kid lost some points for capitalization and punctuation errors and failing to address counterclaims. I believe the event was fake. According to Source 2, the event was exaggerated. I felt that was strong enough evidence to persuade me the event was a hoax. The student's teacher then replied, "You did well using the evidence to support your claim." You can read all these things. Over at the San Bernardino County Sun. Lord God, Billy Bob. This is sickening. it blows my mind. If you go to sbsun.com, exclusive Holocaust denied by students in Rialto school assignment, they've got the actual test answers in the handwriting of the printing of the children. And according to the San Bernardino County Sun, dozens of the eighth graders who took the test came down on the side of Holocaust is fake. And they're there in sort of a PDF scrollable, and you go read it, because I don't want to start vomiting. Let's see. According to Fred A. Leuchter, leading specialist on the design and fabrication of execution equipment, there is no significant cyanide traces in any of the alleged gas chambers, one student wrote. So any open-minded person can easily be persuaded to believe that the gassings were a hoax. And you wonder why I go on and on and on about how valuable what Dr. Bill does is. Granted, he's not talking about the Holocaust, but he's talking about real history. Not the made-up stuff. I briefly got into it the other evening with a guy on Facebook who said that the Commonwealth of Virginia was merely defending itself against northern aggression by the Union Army when the first Battle of Bull Run took place. And when somebody does that, you know, they're so far out there that there's really no arguing with them. No facts, no logic, no nothing. And it's the same with Holocaust deniers. The Southern revisionists and the Holocaust deniers are really cut from the same cloth. It's 8 minutes past the hour. We still are at $20 out of the $150 we need to raise on any given evening for our fundraising this evening. Thank you very much, Glenn. For jumping in without my even having to say anything. Thank you. By the way, lines are open. 304-574-8178. 304-574-8178 is the number to call if you want to get involved in the conversation. We have more Morans. But you may want to bring a particular one to everyone's attention. Or maybe it's a non-Moran kind of thing. Oh, since we've been talking about the predilection of right-wingers for Moranity. It's Moran Monday. Ran across this one the other day and just started screaming. T-Bog, otherwise known as Tom Bagioni, who writes over at Raw Story. He cites a Gawker story in which right-wingers started doing their very best hopping up and down monkey bat impressions after it was reported that American security contractors, do you hear the quotation marks, announced that they had found a Muslim prayer rug abandoned near the Arizona border. A Muslim prayer rug. And once again, we have the three percenters of Mike Vanderbilt involving themselves. The three percenters, American Patriots, got hold of that website that rhymes with light fart to tell them that a Muslim prayer rug had been found on the Arizona border. A patrol was walking around, and Matthew Lieber, he said, that's when I saw this thing laying around. And I was like, what the hell is that? We walked over there, and I didn't really want to pull at it, not knowing what was on it. I poked a bit at it with a stick and noticed some of the Arabic writing and was just like, oh, boy. I snapped a couple of photos and then went on our patrol. There's only one problem. The Muslim prayer rug on the Arizona-Mexico border was an Adidas soccer jersey. Oh, that's what they want you to think, Kincaid. That's what they want you to think. That's how crafty the terrorists are now. They're making their Mecca-worshipping Obama prayer Muslim rugs. They're making them look like soccer jerseys. And that way they can, and then when you're wearing your Obama Adidas Muslim prayer rug soccer jersey and you just happen to momentarily face toward Mecca, it's like that, zap, the next thing out of your mouth you're saying, there is no God but God and Muhammad is his prophet, and zing, you're a Muslim just like Obama is. Don't you see? Don't you see? Fluoride mandrake in little children's ice cream. Next thing you know, there'll be Muslim prayer rugs all over Arizona. And they'll all be facing toward Mecca. And then we're done. We need three percenters. Where's Mike Vanderbilt when you need him? Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello, Jim.
How are you tonight, Bob?
Oh, I'm hanging on.
I can see that. I just tuned in to, well, no, I've been doing other things, but pursuant to this article that you read about the Holocaust.
Yeah, SanBernardinoSun.com, SBSun.com.
And who's writing this stuff?
It was an eighth grade, you know, middle school writing assignment. Is the Holocaust real, or is it just a piece of propaganda that was ginned up for money?
Holy God! Then I wish that they would print, and it's right there. And I wish that you could put on your webpage the minutes of the Wannsee Protocol of 20 January 1942.
Well, they are kind of out there on the internet, aren't they?
I wish you would put that on your Facebook so you could see there the minutes of that meeting in which Goering had sent to Heydrich to have that meeting at that home once owned by a Jewish family on the outskirts of Berlin, and just see exactly how they planned to kill 11 million people.
It's very real.
And the movie itself, it's on YouTube, Conspiracy 2001, Wannsee Protocol. It's an excellent film. We've talked about it before. And these people sat there with a buffet lunch in which they discussed how they would not only eliminate Jews from their society, but from this planet. And they damn near succeeded.
Yeah.
6 million people. Or if they had the opportunity to even to go to the Holocaust Museum in Washington.
Well, the children were taken to the Tolerance Museum of Los Angeles, Jim.
Tolerance of what?
Apparently. Well, they've got a Tolerance Museum in Los Angeles.
Pardon me, but I don't understand. I'm sorry. Maybe I'm missing something here.
They have a Museum of Tolerance in Los Angeles, and after this story broke last May, the children were taken to the Museum of Tolerance to learn about tolerance. I guess they don't have a Holocaust museum in L.A.
Oh, I mean, what's the mission of the Tolerance Museum? I've never heard of it. I'm sorry.
To teach tolerance.
Of what?
I've never having been there myself, never having been to L.A., I'm guessing racial tolerance, gender tolerance, tolerance between the genders, tolerance among the varied skin tones, that kind of tolerance.
Well, very good.
I mean, I'm glad they got one.
Well,
I think these kids, especially the ones who decided, and see, this is the worst part of it, Jim. They were handed prepackaged information with pro and con stuff. And so there was nothing that says, by the way, this is from a loony website that thinks the Holocaust was not real. And here's some real data from the Wannsee protocols, okay, for instance. They weren't given that. They were just given everything, and everything had equal validity, and they were supposed to make a decision based on what they were reading.
At the eighth grade level?
At the eighth grade level.
Uh-huh. That's very reassuring. Well, I can tell you one thing. Whoever is teaching these kids that this monstrous thing did not happen, I will say this. They have got to be the biggest asshole I have ever heard of in my life.
You've been practicing that, haven't you? Yeah. No, I don't know. Like I said, maybe this was done by committee. Maybe this is just one bad teacher. It deserves further examination. But when pressed on it, the Rialto Unified School District said, it's not that bad.
I would put every one of those motherfuckers in jail and give them a dose of what they pretend that they should not believe or what they should question. This really gets under my skin. And I had not intended to do that tonight. But for this kind of crap to be even questioned.
Well, but I think we have to try to learn from this stuff. And I know you feel that way too. And what do we learn? What we learn is that this stuff is on the rise. One would have hoped that the knowledge and the lessons of the Second World War and much of our other history would be remembered, and that the prevalence of these right-wing POSs would decline. They're not declining. They're rising. There are more of them, more and more and more every day.
Then I ask you again, is there any way possible that you could put this on your website?
Well, the website's part
of the Wannsee protocol.
Right now, no, because the website's kind of screwed up, and we got some problems with it. But hopefully, sooner rather than later.
Because there are a lot of people who don't know about this. There are a lot of people who would not even believe it, and there are a lot of people who think that it's just conjecture. But
the further back in time you get, Jim, the more of it. How many people, just guess, okay, just guess, how many people in the United States know that 20 million indigenous peoples were slaughtered in the years after 1492?
I understand that, but there's little we can do about that now. But at least we do have copy number 30, and it was a copy given to von Ribbentrop's secretary, Martin Luther, that was his name, and that was the copy that was discovered, who was an attendee at this meeting in Wannsee. I mean, there's got to be some way to get that out. I mean, people just don't know. And
I think that's where the rub is.
Send a copy to these assholes who are promoting this kind of stuff.
I think that's where the rub comes in, though. I think a lot of people do know about it, but there is a much broader and stronger fascist streak in this country than most people even realize. And no amount of convincing will change the mind of a Nazi, Jim. No number of facts. No amounts of actual history.
Well, you know, my uncles and my father certainly helped change the minds of a few.
I have no doubt.
Well, anyway, like I say, I'm sorry you can't get this out on your website, but I think people need to look it up, The People with the Sound of My Voice. And I know it's not de rigueur to mention the guy with the mustache, Adolf Hitler, but he was the one who said, Goering, write the letter. But I will not be associated with it in writing.
I get that.
People need to know this and to read the minutes of it as if they were the members of a corporation discussing a number of widgets they could either make or unmake.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was a very business-like decision, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, of course it was. I mean, you know, basically, they just sat there, and Eichmann took all the notes and stuff like that, and they had a stenographer there. Of course, all the rolls were destroyed, and it was top secret, and it was basically because the Nazis, in their efforts to conquer so much, had absorbed so many Jews, and they wanted to make every area that they could Jew free.
Yeah.
Like in Latvia and places like that.
Well, it wasn't just
the Nazis. It was a lot of the indigenous peoples who lived in these countries, like in Latvia and places.
Well, consider that phrase from the BibleBelievers.org.au website that I quoted. There were lots killed, but those were Germans, not Jews. As if no Jews held any kind of citizenship in Germany.
Yes, they did. Of course, they did until 15 September 1935.
But see, I can see something like that, Jim, and I can realize that that's a profound flaw in reasoning. It's a bit much to expect an eighth grader, especially the way we teach history in this country, to be able to read that and go, oh, well, that right there, that little phrase, they were Germans, not Jews. That's a big red flag that says this is a load of steaming crap. You get my point?
When I was in the eighth grade, I had no problem absorbing this information.
I don't think...
Not that I was such a hot eighth grader.
I'm trying to think back. I don't think they taught this to us in the eighth grade.
Yes, they taught it to us.
Of course, you've got a few years on me, so yeah, maybe indeed.
A few years, no. 18 years is our difference, and it doesn't make any difference. They taught everything about this to us, and we saw the films.
Now, see, I'm not remembering it in school context because I'm remembering it being driven home by my mother and my father.
We saw the films of what they found.
Well, see, Horst in the chat room is agreeing with you. He says eighth grade was when they showed us the war camp footage.
Exactly. And, of course, you know, during the Nuremberg War Trials, Goering was basically taking almost command of the thing from the American prosecutor. But what took the wind out of his fat ass was the fact when they showed those films, even he couldn't look at them. And then when something was brought up, oh, this, that, and the other, his only comments were, well, I guess somebody slipped up again because they were trying to cover it all up. But
yeah.
You can't cover up the death of 6 million actual people, plus we'll never know. But what they wanted to do from Ireland to Vladivostok, from the North Cape to the sands of North Africa, no more Jews.
Yep. Very good.
And I urge everybody to at least watch that film on YouTube. At least you can see that. If you can't, and to pull up on the internet the minutes of Vance conference.
Okay.
And I've taken up enough of your time, and I thank you for it.
All right, Jim. Have a good evening.
Good night.
Bye now. Yeah, Horst just said something that got my mind going. I said it in the chat room. They probably don't teach it now. And that got me thinking, oh, yeah, they teach it. Obviously, they teach it in the Rialto Unified School District in California. But, and this is where it matters. This is where this stuff matters. And this is the triumph of the right wing in this country. Now, instead of teaching it as historical fact, the Holocaust really happened. Now, this is the triumph of teach the controversy. See, they want to teach the controversy in which 97% of scientists say climate change is real and 3% of scientists who are paid by the petroleum and hydrocarbon industries say it's not. Teach the controversy. They want to teach the controversy that no biologist worth his or her salt thinks that anything but evolution was the means by which life arose on Earth, if you can use evolution and arose in the same sense, and I realize that's problematic. But there are two or three weirdos, so you have to listen to the expert opinion of 97, and that's treated as being equal with the expert opinion of three, and we teach the controversy. And this is that again. There is no credible source on this planet that the Holocaust was not real. But you have to teach the non-credible sources right next to the credible sources and teach the controversy. That's how you wind up with climate change denial. That's how you wind up with Holocaust denial, and it's how you wind up with evolution denial. That's how denialism is now an educational industry. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program,
Bob.
Yeah.
My name is Bill, and I listened to your filibuster earlier. And I think you're way, way, way too hard on the difference between capita and tenant.
Oh, do you have Bill? You have information that says Natalie Tennant openly opposes mountaintop removal.
No. If you're a one issue voter, like you obviously are.
Okay, so we're name calling. Go ahead.
No. So we just disregard the Senate race. But if you're looking at Capito's record as far as taking care or voting for Obama appointees, who do you think would vote more for the head of the Civil Rights Division of the Justice Department, Tennant or Capito?
I have no way of answering that question, Bill, because she has publicly stated that she'll defend West Virginia against Obama.
Okay. I thought it was worth a shot to say, I listened to your filibuster this evening. It's just like, you know what? Why bother voting? Jesse Johnson from the Mountain Party's not running, so I can't vote for him. So you just write off the Senate race
answer this question for me, please.
Okay.
How am I supposed to vote for a woman who actively supports the poisoning of my friends, my neighbors, my colleagues, and my family?
How
am I supposed to do it? Don't answer my question by saying one issue voting.
No.
How am I supposed to do it?
I listened to your filibuster, and you know what? I agree with you. I don't like neither one of them, but you know what? I don't like Manchin either.
Oh, I despise Manchin.
And you know what? electing Capito gives Manchin the freedom to be his true Republican ass.
Maybe that's what we need.
Just for him to just be the true Republican that he is. You know what? With that response, I agree. You know what? If Capito's elected, then Manchin will show his true colors.
Well, Manchin doesn't. Is said he's not even sure he wants to be a senator anymore because everybody won't give him his way. Maybe he'll come back and be governor for us some more.
I just wanted to throw out there. And the other thing is, I'm a longtime C-SPAN viewer, and I remember Miss Capito when she was ramrodding stuff. See, the person that she won't bring to West Virginia to campaign with her, do you remember David Dryden from California, who was the head of that house?
Dryden or Dreyer?
Right. You know who I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
Oh, no, he'll never come. He was so wimpy that Capito got her claim to fame was leading that committee and getting the financial people everything they wanted. And there are Mother Jones stories from that showed how much money she got from the Financial Services Committee. If she wins by 30% West Virginians, you got what you asked for.
Well, the thing is, right now, Bill, the polling data indicates she's going to win by 30%.
Right.
Right. What then does Natalie Tennant have to lose? I mean, is it because see, I'm not the only one. Now, I want you to understand absolutely clearly. I'm not going to vote for Shelley Moore Capito for the Senate seat from the junior Senate seat from West Virginia.
Me either.
I would not be able to live with myself if I did. But there is no difference between her and her opponent on the single most important issue facing this state. Do you think that Natalie Tennant would go, there's another point I want to make after this. Do you think that Natalie Tennant would go to the Senate of the United States and vote against the Keystone XL pipeline?
No, but she's more likely than Capito is.
Do you think she would go to the Senate and vote for meaningful climate change legislation?
No. 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 No, we agree there. No.
Okay, so I have to leave that ballot position blank because it is as if that race does not exist for me because there is not a viable candidate running who represents my any portion of my political thinking. Okay,
Jesse Johnson, where are you?
Well, no, okay, that's the second part that I wanted to raise with you, Bill. The Mountain Party in this state made a conscious choice not to run anyone against Natalie because they didn't want to take votes away from her.
Okay, I did not know that.
All right. Now, third, and this is important. I happen to be in a position where I know a lot, I know no small number of people who think, well, nobody thinks exactly like me because, well, I'm me. But there's a lot of people who can't hold their noses and vote, okay? They just can't. What would happen? Because, see, you've got to also take into account the numbers that are out there. Do you realize that upwards of 60 to 70% of West Virginians, when they're surveyed, even by a Republican survey polling firm, say they despise mountaintop removal and want to see it ended? Now, everybody says, oh, you can't criticize coal because you'll be buried for it. Well, there's 60% of the people in West Virginia who say otherwise. But it is the craven nature of our political class that keeps us from ever finding that out. A man that I respect and consider to be a friend, Ed Rabel, is running as an independent for Shelley Moore Capito's congressional seat. And he's running against a Democrat, Nick Casey, who is bosom buddies with Joe Manchin and might as well be Joe Manchin. And the Republican opponent is distinguishable only because he's a freaking weirdo. You know, he's one of those uterus fascination people. Okay?
Yeah, and he's from Virginia.
No, Maryland.
Maryland. I knew he was from out of state.
Yeah. And so, you know, that's a three-way race, and maybe we'll find something out. If Ed Rabel polls more than 10%, then that might be a little wake-up call to people out there that there's a lot of us out here who want somebody to vote for. Unfortunately, I can't vote for Ed. I'm in the wrong district. I get a choice between Evan Jenkins and Nick Rahal.
And you choose?
To leave that one blank, too.
Okay. Because
I don't want to get personal. I don't want last names. I don't even want to know where you are in West Virginia. But I want to know if you have a family.
Yes.
Okay. I do want to get a little more personal. Do you live anywhere near Mountaintop Removal?
Not currently, but I grew up in Boone County. I'll get personal. This weekend I went down to decorate graves, and I went by to look at my old Little League ballpark and almost threw up when I looked and saw that the seal and the scoreboard and all of the stuff in my old Little League ballpark still had the Massey Cole emblems on them.
Oh, that Mount Doom M with the fire on it?
Yes.
Yeah.
My Little League, I took my grandkids with me, and I went by and showed them the Little League ballpark that I played ball on when I was a little boy. And
okay, well,
the
reason I ask that is if you live in the Mountaintop Removal Sacrifice Zone, then you're breathing poison every day of your life. You have no choice. You can't get away from it. You can't hide from it. It gets under doors, around window casements. It gets in. You cannot avoid it. I know fastidious people who keep perfectly clean homes, and at the end of the day, their house is full of coal dust and blasting dust every day of their lives, and they're breathing that. And that dust is made up of ultra-fine particulate matter that absolutely wreaks havoc inside a human system, and there's nothing in the human system that can stop an ultra-fine generated by a blast from a mountaintop removal site, and it causes cancer, and it causes heart disease, and it causes pulmonary disease, and it causes all manner of havoc inside the human body. It transits the placental barrier in a mother carrying a child. All right? So if you support mountaintop removal, or if you say, it's a balanced approach, then you're saying, it's okay with me if your family breathes that stuff. And it needs to be understood that plainly. I have two daughters who lost their gallbladders before they were 15 years old. Okay, I have a son born with a respiratory birth defect. I have a wife with health issues that probably relate to this. I have been to way too many funerals, Bill. This is real. This isn't some weirdo granny in Massachusetts being a single issue voter because she's worried about the unborn. This is a real fight for our very survival. And if a person who supposedly comes from the Democratic Party cannot say, I stand up for people just being able to stay alive, then she is not deserving of my vote.
I hear you. I understand where you're coming from.
And if that idiot, Shelley Moore Capito, and I don't use that term advisedly, I use it broadly. I mean, look up idiot in the dictionary, and Shelley Moore Capito's picture is next to it. If that idiot winds up in the Senate, that will mean that West Virginia has subsequently elected two idiots to occupy Senate seats that have been held by some of the most brilliant statesmen in this country's history.
I agree. Amen. Okay, I hear where you're coming from, and I agree. Okay, I agree. The thought that Manchin followed Byrd just makes me ill.
It would gag a buzzard.
Right, right. I just finished Bird's book a couple months ago. And then Manchin, every camera that he can get in front of, I looked one, the other night, he was on Charlie Rose. And I'm thinking, what in the world are you doing? Bob, I appreciate you talking to me.
You know, you call in any time, Bill. You are absolutely welcome to participate in the program.
Hey, thanks.
Tell your friends and neighbors. I'd love for the rest of the world to hear what a bunch of hillbillies talking on the front porch sounds like.
Okay, Bob, thank you.
All right, take care, Bill. Bye. That was interesting. First time caller. And you'll notice that Bill did not faint or fall away, and we didn't hear him go thud because he passed out because he done called a radio program. You can do it, too, anytime you want to. And the reason I continued talking to Bill is it was obvious that he was not some right-winger, because that's the caveat. No right-wingers are allowed on this program, ever at all. Let's go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
You talking to me?
I'm talking to you. You talking to me?
No. Yes, sir. How are you?
I'm well.
Well, that was a hell of a conversation.
I thought so. I enjoyed it.
And I'm applauding Jim's. Jim's fired up and bless him.
Yeah.
Because somebody should be. I'll touch a little history, Bob. I just finished a recorded book called Cold, A War in the Cold, or Cold something or other. It was a large engagement fought by the Austro-Hungarian Army and the Russian Army in the Carpathian Mountains. Blood in the Snow was called, or On the Snow. This was horrendous. This was 1915, and the Austrians were trying to defend some fortress or the other, and they're fighting all through these mountain passes. You know where the Carpathian Mountains are?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so you know. But most people would say, what the hell's that? And the Austrian army had already got their asses handed to them by the Serbians, you know, when they invaded Serbia in 1914 here, you know. And by 1915, these guys were up there fighting. And the Austrian army, the soldiers had shoes that had paper soles and God almighty, it was just starvation, Bob. Starvation and freezing to death. It was you and I have that tie in the World War One interests us for some reason.
Yeah.
In fact, I got a book coming from California, a talking book, Max Hastings, the English historian, master of World War Two stuff, had just finished a book on one. Because, you know, that's one is where the wheel started to turn, Bob. And, you know, the anti-Semitic thing, my grandmother
was... That's when the 20th century was born.
Yep. Well, the Austrian army was called Kaiserlicht und Königlicht, Imperial and Royal Army. And Austria-Hungary controlled part of Poland, Czechoslovakia. Somewhere they had a seaport, Bob, on the Adriatic, because they had a seagoing navy of sorts. You look at a map of Europe today and tell me where Austria has got an outlet to the sea. They don't have one.
Yeah, but if you're Austria-Hungary.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I don't think Hungary has an outlet to the sea, do they?
Austria-Hungary was the better part of Central Europe, so...
Well, the empire, yes. The remains of the so-called empire, which was so decrepit, Bob, it was... Well, Emperor Franz Josef, how the hell old was that guy?
Wasn't he
70? Yeah, he had lost an heir in a place called Meyerling, where some guy, one of the guys in line for the throne... I think killed his mistress and then killed himself, and then Franz Ferdinand got the pill at Sarajevo, you know, and his wife, too. In fact, they had a monument marked to the guy that did the shooting. They had some cement, and they had a pair of boots, shoes that belonged to the guy, embedded in the boots where he stood and fired the shots that And Bob, you know, what those two shots to kill those people, how many more human beings were brought into the mess and killed?
Oh, yeah.
World War One was horrendous. The big difference was the lack of air power dropping bombs on people who, although the Germans used a few Zeppelins to raid England a few times, and the English put somehow got some small bombers on board ships. The earliest aircraft carrier belonged to the British Navy, of course. You know, who else? And then we got into it, and maybe we should have stayed out of it. I don't know.
I'll tell you something that I learned a little bit about. And that is the concept of hell ships. Ever heard of those?
Well, the ones that I know, the ones the Japanese were running from.
Right, exactly. And the Allies, knowing full well that these ships were loaded with American prisoners of war, sank them anyway.
British too.
Sank them anyway.
Yeah. Yep. From what I can read, the American submarine service made a tremendous difference in World War II because the Japanese Navy did not find convoying to be important.
Oh, by the way, Jim wants you to know Rudolph killed his mistress and then killed himself.
Pardon me?
Jim wants you to know Rudolph killed his mistress and then killed himself.
Okay, that was it, yeah. Because that was, Meyerling was kind of well known, I guess, in European circles. Yeah, I'm an expert on the Philippine campaign. How, you know, totally unprepared we were, and how MacArthur had his air force in the air, and Formosa had a fog over it, Taiwan. Pardon me. Bring yourself up to date, Bill. And the Japanese had to hold off launching their bombers, and the Americans brought their planes down to refuel and feed the men. And those ships, those airplanes were caught on the ground, Bob. MacArthur had the biggest contingent of B-17s outside the United States at that time. But people make mistakes left and right, you know?
Absolutely.
And it's like the guys that, the guys from the 8th Army in Japan who were sent into to Korea to fight. They were totally unprepared for it. And some of the things the United States Army built, these tanks that were tagged Pershing, you know, after the First World War, General. And they had so many damn belts on those tanks, drive belts of various kinds, that the tank squadrons had to be accompanied by trucks carrying their belts. Sometimes you wonder how people engineer this crap. Or the Sherman tank, which the Americans called a Ronson, the English called it the Tommy Cooker, because they were running Allison radio engines that ran a fairly high octane fuel compared to what the Germans and the Russians. You know, high performance, buddy, you know? Ugh. But that's another story, yeah, And now getting on to what Jim said, you know, the building I live in is full of Jewish folks of Russian descent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I hear them all over the place, and some of them speak English, and I don't speak a word of Russian, so, you know, I give them more credit because they know more English than I know Russian. I think I can say das svidaniya, and that's about it, you know. And I think that's goodbye, isn't it? I don't know for sure. And they came here, Brezhnev told these people, if they didn't like Russia, he must have been a first-class anti-Semite. He told them to get the hell out, Obama. We had an incursion of Russian Jews. It was a very large contingent in the late 70s that came over. In other words, Jim's right. People don't get over this stuff. The best education I had was working in these knitting factories and living in a project that was loaded with African American citizens, because I got to know things about people on a personal, when the lady in the First War would bring up some, black lady would bring up some southern fried catfish, buddy, I'm telling you, it took an instant liking to him, and he started to know a little bit about them and their families, and I learned early that there's human beings are human beings. Bob, there's some good cultural differences in this country. Cleveland used to be loaded with various, I was talking to one of the guys who's a member of the group. You stopped by tonight to give me a new mouse for my computer, and he's going to do some work on it. He's a buddy of Thomas. It was Thomas set me up with the guy. He's a great guy, and he's connected with a radio station, WRUW, which is Case Western Reserve. I'll be performing down there on Wednesday myself, if I'm still alive. Thursday night, pardon me. I'll be talking the history of the music that I play in the city, because I was the first, Bob. I was the first Caucasian blues player in the city. And I'm proud of it, you know. I'm proud of that fact. And I worked in places that were the only Caucasian face with me and another musician, you know. And we got along fine. And you start learning, when you're involved in this kind of environment, you learn immediately that people are people, and some of the biggest enemies I had were some white boys in the projects who thought they were going to be somebody. Well, they did be somebody. They became guests of the state, you know, in later years, so to speak. So, but yeah, it's just amazing the things that we don't know, like the hell ships and the Bataan Death March. I have a hard time handling that, because it wasn't only American POWs who were getting killed.
No. Far more Filipino
soldiers
were killed in the Bataan Death March than Americans. And the response, and you know what? The response, I read the response to the, because the Bataan Death March was only made public in like 1944. And I read the response of General George C. Marshall. And it was one of the nasty, I mean, the Bataan Death March calls for a strong response. It shocks the conscience, much as so much of the rest of World War II did. But George C. Marshall's response to the Bataan Death March was absolutely sickening. Let me see if I can find it real quick.
And it wasn't the run-of-the-mill Japanese citizen, you know.
No, these were... No, this was the high command kind of stuff. Here, I see. George C. Marshall. These brutal reprisals upon helpless victims evidence the shallow advance from savagery which the Japanese people have made. We serve notice upon the Japanese military and political leaders, as well as the Japanese people, that the future of the Japanese race itself depends entirely and irrevocably upon their capacity to progress beyond their aboriginal barbaric instincts.
Well, the armed forces of their nation were... my one German friend, whose father was a sub-officer, he said the Germans were typically Teutonic. They had to keep accurate records of everything, Bob. I mean, it's being facetious, but it ain't funny. It's not meant to be funny. It's just, you know, we know a lot more about what happened in Europe. And the problem that I really have a problem with is the Holocaust was like the tip of the iceberg with the Germans. They weren't too kind to anybody. I guess they fought it out with, of all people, the Mafia in Naples when they were fading up the peninsula. The Germans are going up the Italian peninsula there. Mm-hmm. The mob guys took a piece of them because, yeah, you're cutting into their money, you know? And you know what that does to people.
Yeah, indeed. Brings out
cut
the
into somebody else.
Hey, Bill, I got to roll along here. We're right at the end of things.
Anyway, you take care. Good night.
Gonna. Thank you. Take care, Bill. Bye now. I was shocked. But then again, William Tecumseh Sherman said it best: "War is hell." Yeah. Look a 27-year-old mother and her 18-month-old baby learned the lesson of William Tecumseh Sherman just last week. War is hell. Hell on earth. That's the thing. He should have said, war is hell on earth. Because hell is manufactured, whether it be in someone's mind or whether it be on the planet itself. So we come to the end of the program for the evening. I want to thank Glenn. Thank you very much, Glenn, for being the only person to participate in fundraising this evening. We did also have, we ended the week, last Friday, in a hole. But it wasn't a terribly deep one. And thus we were able to get out of it with the kind help of a number of members of the Horn Family Commune. Bill and James and Robert all helped out in that regard. As did Brian. Thank you. Thank you very much. And this is how we keep it going. And so thank you one and all for those of you who do keep this on the air. We will begin tomorrow night, Titanic Tuesday, with a shiny new $270 hull. Unless, things change overnight. And they could. PayPal buttons at headonradionetwork.com, so too for the traditional mail address. Thanks to all of you for sharing your time and joining this discussion. Thank you for your calls, your emails. Thank you for your tweets. Haley was particularly trenchant on the Twitters this evening, referring to Natalie Tennant as Mark Pryor with mascara. Itching to go along and get along with the Repiglicans, no matter the cost. Thank you, Haley. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you, indeed, to the hardest-working, bravest people I know. The men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and ACHEACT.org. If you want to see an end to mountaintop removal, then get busy on the grassroots level on behalf of the AIC Act. Maybe we'll talk about this a little bit later in the week. There's some opportunities opening up. AICAct.org is where you go to learn about the science and to learn about the realities of mountaintop removal. The AIC Act itself, H.R. 526, in the House of Representatives, and what we hope will eventually be introduced in the Senate. Oh, Senator Warren, why don't you introduce the AIC Act in the Senate? Could you do that? Maybe members of the Massachusetts contingent of the Horn Family Commune could write some letters to Senator Warren asking that she do exactly that. Emails, phone calls, that kind of thing. It's the Horn family has been terribly effective in getting stuff done in that regard. You get active, you get it done. Don't wait around for the Sierra Club. Don't wait around for the Natural Resources Defense Council. Don't wait around for somebody who isn't even from Central Appalachia who claims to be Appalachia's voices. Don't wait for them. They're never going to have the answers. They're never going to lead. They're never going to end mountaintop removal. Only those of us of goodwill and good conscience who are absolutely determined to see it ended will get it done. AICAct.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.